There's a story that captures a lot of what we're feeling right now. There's the story that shows the divide. That what we believe and how we feel do not perfectly match up today. I had a friend once who lost a father that she loved very deeply. And she is a woman of deep faith who actually used to live in Utica. And when I called to console her, I said, "I am so sorry to hear about your dad. Don't you wish we could say something better than that? Better than I'm sorry? It doesn't sound like it's enough." But I wanted her to know, as far as words could take it, "I am so with you. I am so sorry for what you're going through." And this is what she said to me. She said, "My dad was sick, and he was a good man, and I am happy for him. He is home. And I know that God will be good to him, and I am at peace, and my spirit is at rest." And then before I could say another thing, she said, "But my flesh cries out for my dad." Is that not it? I don't think there's anybody here today who's worried. Will God be good to Elaine? Is God going to be good to her? Will she be embraced? Is she welcome at that table? No one's thinking anything other than, of course. No one's worried for her. We know how good God is, and we know how wonderful she was. But our flesh cries out. And that's why it's so important that we're here. Because we have to do two things right now that seem like they can't be done at the same time, and yet they must. We have to celebrate her life because it was beautiful. A beautiful symbol of how God loves us in a very particular way. And if we don't celebrate her, it wouldn't be right. But we also have to grieve because she's undergone a transition that will, for the rest of our lives, change the way we connect with her. We can't deny that. So we have to do both of those things right now. We have to celebrate and delight in her, because if we don't, we won't be giving her her due. We won't be gleaning all the things from her life that can help us for the rest of our journey. But if we don't grieve and mourn, we're setting ourselves up for a rough road ahead. So that's why we come to God's house to do this, because we don't know how to do this. But all things are possible with God. So we come here to do that work that we have to do. And we hear that we are not alone in that, because what we are hearing in those readings is that our ancestors went through this exact same thing. And if you think about what those disciples went through, the trauma, the PTSD they had from seeing the person they had followed and loved crucified right in front of them. If you think about how much their flesh was crying out, yet how deep their belief was, how much they yearned for those promises to come true, how much those women maintained an openness that it could be possible, how much they were willing to see things differently when he appeared to them in an unexpected way. That's the work that we're doing right now, all of us. And Mark opened it up beautifully for us, because it's important for us to delight in the way that Elaine brought ritualized love into the life of her family and her circle of love throughout her life. We need to recognize that. And we need to take today and especially look at it closely, pull it apart, hold her life out like this and turn it so that, like a jewel, we can see all the different prisms that refract and reflect light from it. And I'd like to lift up a few of those things that really stood out to me, knowing her over the course of 25 years and knowing her family. And I'd like to then invite you to join in that for the rest of today and the rest of your lives, to continue thinking about how Elaine's life has affected your life. And I'd like to start by talking about how this woman of ritualized love prioritized relationships in her life. It would be silly to not start with Phyllis, because that was her partner in crime. One of them looked like their mom, one of them looked like their dad, but the truth is, you know when you look at one that that's the sister of the other. And their memories go back so far. Everything that they see in Utica reminds them of the other. Driving on the parkway, ice skating at the rink. Driving through Cornhill, dances at St. Francis de Sales School. Going downtown, remembering Monday nights when Woolworths was open till 9 p.m. and they would be strolling downtown. Double dating as they were going through high school. All those memories. And they cherished each other and continue to. Always together, always in contact, morning phone calls, evening phone calls, years of suppers together every day. And directing their love in very specific ways. They loved their parents. And after their mother died, they knew that it was up to them to take care of their dad. They didn't know how hard it would be, though, because they had no way to know that he would have a stroke that would leave him speechless for 10 years. The last 10 years of his life were very difficult. And they had to face the limitations of knowing they couldn't fix it. They couldn't fix it. They could only walk with him and comfort him. And this is where Elaine's ritualized love was a secret weapon, a superpower for her dad. So that as he sat there not being able to talk, living in Phyllis's home, being able to go out to adult daycare during the day and then coming home, it was her constancy, her rituals, her willingness to make him the center priority for 10 years that brought him such comfort and made those last 10 years of his life, which could have felt like an utter curse, into a blessing, where the love of his daughters guided him day by day, moment by moment, through his routines. You see that Phyllis's kids are here. They shared the word with us today. And those kids and their kids are so central in this story. Elaine wanted to make sure that they knew how much she loved them. And so you know what she did? She did the thing that a woman of ritualized love would do. She bought them predictable things every holiday. If you wanted clothes, turn to the fashionista of East Utica, the queen of the princess shop, who would make sure that they were decked out as a sign of her love for them. But of all the relationships in her life, it was very clear the one that she waited the longest for and the one that she treasured in the center of her heart. She waited 12 years to have a child. And when he was born, what a child she got. Mark was certainly enough for a mom to raise without any other siblings, because Mark gave his wonderful mother a run for her money. She had a son too smart for his own good. This boy was an intellect that no one in his schools had ever seen before. And I think that's where it's time to shift to another one of her wonderful traits. The way that she showed how the relationships in her life mattered. Elaine was a remarkable steward of the gifts that God gave her. That house on Brinkerhof, she knew it was a treasure, so she cleaned it till the paint came off. Mark was her treasure that she waited 12 years for. So this single mother figured out, scrimped and saved, how to put him through private Catholic school. She certainly could have put him in the public schools. They're very good. There's lots of ways that that would have served him well. But she knew that she had a special treasure in him. His intellect was unusual, and she recognized it. She knew that she didn't have all that he had. No one did. So she put him in Catholic schools, and she paid for him to go to Notre Dame. And then she sent him to a private Catholic college where he and I met. And of course, he was the top scholar in every place, the valedictorian of each place he went. Can you imagine how hard that was for a single mom? But Mark shared with us how she did it. Complete discipline, reverence for the resources God gave her, and a life lived like it was 1920, all cash, all the time. This was not a woman to pull out the plastic. When her cable bill came, she got in the car and she went over to the office and went to the counter. And she paid that bill in cash. She believed in living within her means. So because she knew when everyone's birthdays were, and because she wanted to spoil them, she planned, she saved, she looked for sales. Nobody would have thought that this woman was on a limited budget because she was dressed like Sophia Loren. It always mattered to her to put herself together. She never allowed herself to be out without being completely coordinated and beautiful. And I exhausted Mark starting in college by saying, "Your mom is so beautiful." Nobody wants to hear that. You know, a little compliment is fine, but he was like, "All right, all right, all right." But she was, and you know it. This was a beautiful woman. And so she would look for sales. She would make sure that things were affordable. She would put herself last, but she would leave herself on the list. One of her remarkable stories in life, one of her great relationships that she had was with Elvis Presley. I'm not going to tell you any scandals. It's nothing like that. It's just that from the time she was a teenager, she loved him. And I said, "Phyllis, did you love him too?" She said, "Not like Elaine." So imagine the shock when Elaine finally got tickets to an Elvis concert. He was coming to Utica in 1977, and he died that week. Can you imagine? But she held that torch for him, and she would look for sales so that she could have an Elvis calendar on the wall, Elvis plaques and music in her house. And she realized that singing Elvis songs to herself was free. So she would do that all day as she cleaned, humming along with her favorite Elvis tunes. She knew what mattered, and she knew that it was all a gift from God and that it was meant to be stewarded. So that's what she did. A single mom who put her son through private schools and maintained her home and did it proudly and beautifully on one income. The last thing I'd like to share with you about her life, and obviously we could go on about this all day, and I hope you will. I hope you'll go through the rest of today and the rest of your lives sharing about what she had to teach us. But obviously, the center of her life above all things was faith. How appropriate that she was a member of Blessed Sacrament Parish, because the Eucharist was the center of her faith. She never missed. She never went without. It was how she survived. And she passed that on to Mark. She passed on this faith beautifully to Mark. And she always believed that Mark was a gift from God and was entrusted to God. You always could tell that when you talked to her. She was very proud to be his mother, but very humble about her role, because she knew that the gifts that Mark had could not have come all from her. They obviously came through her because he had gifts that she didn't have. So it was interesting that although Mark wound up going on to get a PhD in theology and is more educated than all of us priests up here, the fact that Mark is called Dr. Mark and that he's a professor and that his job right now is advisor to the U.S. bishops on theology. Can you imagine this? He tells the bishops how to read the scriptures in a more creative and open and honest way. That's what he does. So you would have thought that this woman, single mom, who paid for her son's schooling would say, "Annette Funicello, you think she's a big deal from Utica? Forget it. I'll tell you who's a big..." Never, never. You know what she said when you would ask her what Mark did for a living? "He works for the church." He works for the church. Humble, proud of her son, but never bragging. Because her faith valued humility. So she would smile if you said, "Wow, Mark's really smart." She'd say, "Yeah, he's smart. He works for the church." never telling you the fullness of what he did. A big part of her faith was a devotion to St. Jude. Many of you know about St. Jude. St. Jude is who you turn to when things are hopeless. And that's where her faith really showed its might. This was a woman who did her work. And that showed in a lot of ways. The work that she did in her faith, the love she had for God, and the devotion she had to the power of grace coming through saints like St. Jude, allowed her to be so faithful to her dad, to never give up hope, to never, after 7 years of him not speaking, throwing her hands up in the air and saying, I can't do this anymore. No, coming back the next day, faithfully loving him, faithfully being there for him and the whole family. She, like a lot of us, has known the pain of divorce. After 22 years of marriage, her marriage ended, and it was very painful, as divorce always is. It was a lot of work for her to move forward from that, but this is a woman who believed in the patron saint of hopeless causes. So she kept working at it, how to gain some acceptance, how to gain a sense of peace. And do you know that this woman, who struggled with that sorrow for a long time, found a way to be able to break bread with her ex? She found a way to be able to talk to him and be at peace and accept that it was what it was. It wasn't how she would have had it, but she didn't need it to be any different to love God and continue on her journey. And it says something that her ex was drawn at the end of her life to come to her bedside and pray near her. Something drew him mysteriously, the mystery of the faith that can accept and move toward forgiveness after something so hard. So although our flesh cries out, we need to listen to our spirits, which are telling us all is well. This was never not part of the plan. We never know how many years or months or heartbeats we're going to have. But God made Elaine to be with us and walk with us, and God made us to walk with her and one day walk her home. That was part of the plan from the beginning. Nothing has gone wrong. Nothing is awry. She is with God. We believe that. And we believe that God is with us. So can we possibly be that far away from her? Let us go forward on the rest of our journey with hope, looking for all the ways we can ritualize love in our own lives.